What does your group work on?
So we're interested in three different areas: solar energy, in particular flexible solar panels, materials that go into those solar panels. We are interested in wearable and potentially implantable mechanical sensors for biology, for human physiology and rehabilitation. We have another project in that area on devices for measuring mechanical processes in cells. And finally, the third area is haptics and human-machine interfaces. So how do, in particular, how can materials be designed to interface with the sense of touch and to learn about the sense of touch? Now, those three areas seem completely disconnected, but they are not. They are tied together by a core fundamental scientific problem, which is the structure function relationships in the ways in which organic materials have particular can be designed to exhibit particular electronic and especially mechanical function. So the particular area in organic or in solar cells that we're interested in is how to make these layers more mechanically robust, more flexible, more resilient. In our work in bioelectronics, we're interested in mechanical processes in cells. We're interested in mechanical sensors that all involve using these materials that we're making as the sort of the locus of sensing or actuation. And then finally, in haptics, we're interested in making these materials generate tactile sensations that you can't. That you can't generate from conventional actuators.
How is your work funded?
We have five federally funded projects, so three NS or two NSF projects, actually three NSF projects, and one of them is a multi-PI center grant. We have a project from the Air Force Office of Scientific Research. We have a project from the National Institutes of Health. So I guess we have six because we have another one from the California Energy Commission. And those are the major sources of support. The projects bleed into one another. There is nobody in the lab who is working only on one thing. Everybody helps each other. The types of equipment that we use are common between the projects. So while the application areas are quite disparate, the methods turn out to be somewhat similar, at least on the material science aspect.
Is there one project or grant you are especially excited about?
We managed to get a grant with Artem Patapoutian as a mentor, who just won the Nobel Prize last October for his group's discovery of the ion channels in the skin that contribute to the sense of touch and fine texture. So yeah, our piece of the project is to build devices that can apply small forces to mechanically responsive cells to learn about how they behave in certain environments that are hard to, let's say, observe naturally.
How many students are in your group?
Sure, right now we have seven PhD students. Six undergraduates and two postdocs.
Is that typical?
Yeah, that's pretty typical. Our high water mark, I believe, was 11 grad students and two postdocs and 18 undergrads. They weren't all there at the same time. So that was our high water mark in each category. But we've had as many as 25 people in the lab at any given time.
How do you communicate with your lab members?
The method of one-on-one communication that's typical between me and the grad students and postdocs is very similar. Undergraduates I meet with less often. So grad students, I have an individual meeting with them every 4 weeks. I have a subgroup meeting with them and a couple of close collaborators of theirs every 4 weeks, but they're staggered, so I see progress on the project every 2 weeks. And every quarter, there is a group meeting every week, and one person presents, one to two people present their work of the last 10 or 11 weeks at the group meeting. And then at the end of that group meeting, we have a round table where everybody gives a quick update of 1 to 2 minutes.
The round table sounds like a great idea. Does that work well?
Yeah, the purpose of that is to share best practices. I mean, what I don't want it to turn into is I better show Darren what I've been working on, so I'm going to come up with a laundry list of stuff so it sounds like I've been productive. What I want that meeting to be, or what that roundtable to be, is to say, oh, I'm having some issues with such and such an instrument or a technique. Or I learned something about an instrument or technique that I want to share with you. We also have the opportunity for lab members to give shout outs to other group members if they were either, helped in kind of a selfless way by that person, or if they observed that person giving help selflessly to somebody else. We used to give awards for shout outs at the end of each quarter, but we stopped doing that because the same people ended up getting them every quarter. And it's not so much that those were necessarily the most selfless people, helpers in the lab, but often they had group jobs that affected everybody. So they might have, constitutionally been the most helpful, but in reality, it's because they were in charge of a popular piece of equipment and came in on the weekend to fix it and stuff like that.
How long have you been doing the shout outs?
The shout out piece started in 2016. We had a grad student, Brandon Marin, who had spent time in industry, and he's at Intel now. He has a phone book of patents under his name. And he introduced the shout outs to the lab, and we've kept it ever since.
How have shout-outs and other cultural elements you have implemented influenced climate in your lab?
I would put our climate up against anybody's. I think if I look at the labs that I've been a member of, I would rather be a member of my lab than the labs I've been a member of. Not to take anything away from those places. They're fine places. Were responsible for our for my success, such as it is, but I do think that things like this contribute to the welcoming, open, and trusting climate that we have.
How do you hire new lab members?
When we hire a new person, a grad student or a postdoc, we rock the Coke machine back and forth a lot. They meet with us individually. They have multiple meals with the current grad students. We don't just, I as a PI, I don't just take somebody on and impose them on the group. They need to go through the ringer and make sure that we don't hire any jerks. So it starts there. You know, we start with a good substrate of people,
What do you look for in new lab members when you are interviewing?
I look for curiosity above all. I think that for a grad student or a postdoc or an undergraduate for that matter, they need to be coming into research for the right reasons. And it's either because they're already curious about a topic and want to learn more, or it's kind of like a meta curiosity. They are curious about if research is for them, but they really want to get into it and learn what it is to be a researcher before making that decision. Not just like, I'm going to go to a couple group meetings and work 3 hours a week. It's, I want to really get in there, really get dirty in the library, looking up old papers and learning obscure techniques and talking to my lab mates. So curiosity is, I think, the number one thing. It's actually hard to be, I think that automatically drives out a lot of toxic personality types as well, because if somebody's genuinely curious about things, about research or the particular scientific topic that they're interested in, they actually have a lot less mental bandwidth to be consumed with being like alpha, or being greedy about acquiring resources or attention. And I think that it kind of goes hand in hand with being curious kind of excludes a lot of that. I also like people to be independent. I am the associate dean for students in engineering, as well. And I do not have the bandwidth to micromanage students' projects. And even if I did, I probably wouldn't be the best person to do it because I haven't worked in a lab in more than 10 years. And I really do need students to come to meetings with their independently formulated ideas. I need them to be able to reach out to vendors and collaborators, and each other. Sometimes that can be a challenge for some individuals. And I provide strategic scientific insights, let's say. I provide funding, God willing. I provide exposure. I provide training on writing and other professional development opportunities.
How do you deliver your onboarding material?
I'm a big believer in video and YouTube, and all of our welcome materials are online. I gave a series of talks maybe three fall quarters ago, on our mission, values, and strategy. I gave another one on safety, and I gave another one on sort of administrative onboarding aspects. And so when students come on board, they're asked to view those materials. It's almost like a video lab manual. And the that's been pretty successful. I probably need to update them pretty soon. We have thought about a lab manual for a long time, but never put it together. But the videos are pretty good. And what else? Oh, you had asked if the onboarding procedures were similar from new member to new member. Yes, they are similar. So if it's a postdoc, we take them, usually I take them to breakfast or coffee. Then they have a few one-on-one meetings with my current group members. They do a seminar followed by a lengthy Q&A. And then they have some more meetings. They usually have an exit kind of interview with me, and then my students take them to dinner. And that's when I think we learn a lot about candidates because they're no longer kind of on their best behavior, right? And when the candidate's best behavior with me matches their best behavior with my students, it's a good sign. And so we go from there. Usually, some considerations of funding are taken care of, and then, it's a yay or nay decision. Grad students, there is a departmental process for recruiting grad students. So they go into the graduate student pool in nano and chemical engineering, where I am. We get about 400 PhD candidates. We end up taking about maybe accepting about 25, and maybe 15 come. So it is a low probability event. We get the most successful candidates tend to be the ones who reach out to their to me ahead of time, and definitely list me in their among their faculty interests, because if they don't, I might not be assigned to their application. And then once they're here, we structure it kind of the same way. There are some mandatory events during the recruitment weekend that they have to attend. But other than that, I try to structure it as closely as possible as to what I describe for postdocs. The last cohort are undergraduates. Most undergraduates are not recruited directly by me, but I get emails of interest from undergrads, and at the same time, I get emails or I get notification from my grad students and postdocs, and even senior undergraduates that they're looking for assistance with their project, and then I connect them to the most promising undergraduates who have sent me their resumes, and then they arrange for interviews and then decide who their top choices are. I usually meet with the grad student or postdoc or plural at the same time, figure out who's gonna be assigned to which project, and that's how we do it.
Do you use any electronic tools to control your workflow in the lab?
Most of my direct communication with the lab comes through group meetings. So at the end of group meeting, when everyone's done their roundtable, it comes around to me, and I talk about any big issues that may, be on the table or on the horizon. My group has recently started using Slack. I think the jury is still out as to whether or not that's going to be what we use going forward. They seem to like it. They seem to check it. It didn't start with me because I don't need another app to check. I consider myself a fairly productive person with fairly decent time management skills, and I do the one thing that you're never supposed to do is to use your email inbox as your to-do list, which I absolutely do. So Slack is kind of a garden path for me, but my students wanted to try it because otherwise they're just using GChat, and Slack is certainly better than that for keeping track of purchasing and equipment, being down and stuff like that.
How often do you post to Slack versus your students posting?
Through the Slack channel, it's usually coming through other lab members. I would say that if I'm going to make an important announcement to the group, I haven't really done that yet on Slack, except for kind of business related things like a candidate is visiting tomorrow or whatever. But I'll usually use email for that.